This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
A very good morning to everybody on BFM 89.9, the morning run. I am Koo Soo Chung with Shazana Mokhtar and Wong Chao Ning. Despite the rainy season and the thunder clouds, America had a very good day overnight. There was a bit of a rebound, actually. The risk on investors made a return to the entry door.
Yeah, it's a question we're going to ask our commentator in a few minutes. And Joe Quinlan, of course, who's the chief market strategist at US Trust Bank of America Wealth Management. So I think interesting stuff that's going to follow for the rest of the show is.
Yeah, so we'll just recap how the US markets closed. The Dow was up 1.8%, the S&P 500 was up 1.4%, and the Nasdaq was up 0.8%. All happy markets.
Meanwhile, Asia not so good, a sea of red. Nikkei was down 3.3%, Hang Seng down 1.1%. Shanghai was marginally flat, Singapore Straits Times down 0.8%, while the FBM KLCI was down 1.1%.
So to dive into what's happening and the whys and wherefores of the markets, we've got on the line with us Joe Quinlan, the chief market strategist for the US Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management. Joe, good morning. Now, a relatively good day in American equities, and markets appear to be at a crossroads. There are those who are nervous about the rate hikes and tapering, while there are those who are positive with the infrastructure fiscal spending. Where are you sitting in which camp?
Well, we're still constructive on equities. A little taper tantrum here going on last week with the Federal Reserve. I think the Fed has to do a better job communicating about their dot plots. But really, at the end of the day, the economy is strong. Earnings are going to be better than expected. There's some worries about peak growth, real GDP growth in the second quarter. But I think productivity gains and more service-related activity, you want to be in the market. You want to own equities. So any pullbacks, they're buying opportunities.
Earnings season is around the corner. Are you optimistic, or do you think the market hasn't priced in a potential margin squeeze from the recent labor and input cost increases?
You know, I think what the big story will be how well companies passed on these input costs to the final consumer, whether it's businesses or households, and because we have a lot of money, households, incomes are rising. So I think earnings are going to be better than expected. And it depends, obviously, on the sector. Financials would do better, probably trading. Cyclicals, industrials probably do better. Energy is, you know, just to the moon, as everyone knows. Maybe that pulls back. That could be a story where there's good earnings, but you kind of pull back, sell the news. But I think earnings in general, given the backdrop, going to be good, not fully priced in. That's the key. But not first quarter earnings were off the chart because it was way beyond expectations. The optimism in Q2 won't be as great, but it'll still be upward bias.
And Joe, we see a continuation of this pull between value and cyclicals. Which one do you currently prefer, considering markets have already risen quite significantly on a year-to-date basis?
We still like the value trade because we think it has a long ways to go, and people are underestimating how well these companies managed through the pandemic, how much they're going to pass on these costs to the final end users, and then how the productivity gains that are coming forward. So I think, you know, companies are reinventing themselves, becoming more productive, honing in on their core competencies. So we still like value, but, you know, I still have said this 1,000 times on your show. I still like technology. So anytime big tech pulls back, buy it.
Well, that's the thing. So Apple, Amazon, Netflix have all lagged the broader S&P so far this year. Do you reckon there's going to be an inflow into these names in a significant way?
You know, you're seeing some secondary names pick up, whether it's Intel, some others. You know, they're not secondary, but they're beyond the big five mega tech companies. So it's broadening out. The tech expansion, the tech rally is broadening out. And that's good because remember a year ago, it was so concentrated, it was dangerous. So I see, you know, I do think Apple, some of the big guys, the tech companies, they're just going to grind it out, go higher. And, you know, we've got to watch the regulatory backdrop for sure in Europe, in the United States. You know, China's off limits, but there's some headwinds. But on pullbacks, you want to be buyers.
So turning to the U.S. dollar, the weak U.S. dollar is a narrative that has prevailed since March 2020. Will the Fed's hawkish stance close the chapter on that story, do you think?
I really don't think so. I mean, the dollar got a little bit of a bid here, but the biggest issue, we'll be talking about this a lot about this next year, are the twin deficits, the federal budget deficit and the current account deficit. And that just, you know, to me, it means a weaker dollar overall. So that's still yet to come. So the dollar's got a little bit of a bid here. I'm not looking for any dramatic decline in the dollar, but, you know, clearly, you know, the euro area is now issuing more euros. Russia wants to diversify out of the dollar. China's looking at cryptocurrencies. So the dollar, you know, weakness here makes a lot of sense to me over the next 12 months or so.
Now, another currency that's actually been seeing quite significant weakness has been the yen. So is it time to look at the Nikkei 225?
Yeah, we like Japan. You know, it's kind of underperformed. Europe is just been a star performer, you know, large cap Europe. But, you know, Japan, you know, more the vaccine, they've been behind with the vaccination rollout. So the reopening of the economy, thanks to the vaccinations, is still in front of Japan. So whether it's a weaker yen, you know, kind of partial Olympic, so to speak, but really the vaccination rollout, you know, we like Japan in that developed market space.
Yeah, Joe, just back stateside for a little while, there seems to be a dichotomy here in terms of the spread of the variants among under-vaccinated states in America, contrasted with the return, presumably, of the cruise line market. 2 million passengers, of course, in the cruise industry as well, resuming operations. How do you make sense of this, you know, conundrum from a market standpoint?
Well, I mean, the cruise line industry is ready to bounce back. It's probably already been priced into these big names in the equity markets. But, you know, you can look at the airlines, look at the restaurants, New York City, even with the variants. You know, we're being more diligent about who's vaccinated, social distancing, and masks. So, you know, the cruise line industry, one of the last travel industries to open up, and that's just exactly what's happening. But we got to watch the variant, no doubt. I mean, the folks who are not vaccinated are most at risk. And so you're seeing these little spikes and surges in certain states. I don't think it becomes a national issue, but it's something we're watching very carefully.
And Joe, Bloomberg, is reporting that one investment house, let's not name them, is forecasting US dollar 100 for oil per barrel. I mean, do you think that's achievable? What kind of impact is that going to have on the economy, though?
Well, if we reach $100 oil, a barrel of oil, 100 bucks, how long would it stay there? Probably not too long. Because, you know, the $100 barrel of oil, that just brings in a lot of supply. That gets all the Texas wells up and running. So, you know, I'm not sure how we get there. But the key issue is how long it stays there. And, you know, I just think there's enough, whether it's natural gas, renewables, just more rig count. That $100 oil, even $80-plus oil, creates its own supply mechanism, which brings down the price.
All right, Joe, thanks so much for your time. That was Joe Quinlan, Chief Market Strategist for the U.S. Trust, Bank of America Private Wealth Management. Those who shall stay are unnamed in terms of the oil forecast. Does it start with B and end with A, or is it Goldman's?
Well, I think it's the former rather than the latter.
Yeah. On predicated on what, though? I mean, just in terms of the return of the tourism and cruise industry?
Yeah, it's just a general economic recovery. But I wonder whether that's going to be sustainable, because every time oil hits a certain milestone, then you see shale coming up, you know.
So all
the other stuff starts pumping away, right? And then the market kind of achieves a certain level of equilibrium. Also, if oil prices go up too much, then everybody starts curtailing their travel plans. So I think this is something we have to watch, especially it actually benefits our economy because we're still a net energy exporter.
I'm sure the MOF would have had their ears prick up when they saw, you know, oil continuing to inch up, and $100 a barrel is nice. It's music to their ears.
Yeah, but it brings its own conundrum too. Don't forget, when oil goes up, the government's bill in terms of subsidy also goes up because our tank prices are fixed for the RON 95 at 207, am I correct?
Yeah. But if there's still MCO 4 and 5 and 6 0.0, like Groundhog Day, then ain't nobody going to be driving the cars.
That is true.
Well, what is not going up is cryptocurrencies. I think right now trading below $32,000 per Bitcoin. The Chinese don't seem to be letting up. They've told Alipay and other assorted of their members to not allow payments to be made via crypto.
Yeah, crypto, actually, well, if you look at Bitcoin specifically, it's at the lows last seen in January. So like what you say, Chuang, is actually 31,650. It's only up 9.12% on a year-to-date basis. Shocking when you think earlier this year, 100%.
Heresy.
Almost, yeah. Plus Ethereum, only up 157%, was originally up 700%, down this morning 2%.
So I think we can see that, you know, China's comments on crypto is obviously rattling the market, but it should also be known that China was never really going to let Bitcoin alone, right? I mean, this cryptocurrency, it goes against everything that the Communist Party essentially stands for.
Control.
You know, it goes against the country's strict capital controls. You know, it goes against protective measures designed to prevent an outflow of wealth. So yeah, it's really no surprise. For all this while, they just tolerated it. So
yeah, from a China standpoint, there's a twin no-no, right? First of all, their you know, control is their middle name, right? The Chinese Control Party. I'm just joking. The second thing is obviously the fact that they want the yuan to be
internationalized,
the next reserve currency, yeah, because they see themselves as the next big dog, right? Crypto puts a spanner in that works because you cannot control crypto.
They are also coming up with their own digital currency. Yeah. So, you know, it's not in their favor to actually allow Bitcoin to kind of, or any of the cryptocurrencies to kind of emerge and become like a really dominant form of payment in China. But I think this also sends a stronger message globally that regulatory constraints or compliance is going to be the new risk that all cryptocurrencies face. So China perhaps taking the hardest stance out there, but I'm not going to be surprised if other regulators or other central banks also make the same overtures. I mean, even Singapore, Monetary Authority of Singapore has kind of come out to kind of give warnings like, how do you value this? It's gone up a lot. Because at the end of the day also, if you take a paternalistic stance in central banks, you're very worried that your citizens might actually be losing quite a lot of money.
Well, absolutely. I mean, crypto is all about disintermediation, and what are central banks? Intermediaries. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.